There was a lady that went in the kitchen. Her husband had this electrical cord around him, and he was just doing this, and she thought he was being electrocuted. So she knew not to touch him. So what she did, there was a cane over there, a stick, walking stick. She took that and hit him as hard as she could, knocked him over. He was listening to a Walkman. Broke his arm, broke his collarbone. Things are not always just. Trying to do what's right doesn't always pay as far as the world is concerned. I read the other day where when the Exxon Valdez wrecked and spilled all the oil out, that they would gather up these little seals and they would wash them and clean them up. Now, this is the figure that they gave. $80,000 per seal to wash it. They said rehabilitate it. I don't know whether they had counseling or not. But to rehabilitate this, and then they would let them go. They got two of them, cleaned those things up, did all they were supposed to do for them, and had those little seals and got them out there, put them in the water, and they just swam off. Boy, and you think, oh, great. About the time they got out a little ways, one of these whales came up and just swallowed both of them. Life is not always just. Doing right does not always pay. Doing good, sometimes you don't get treated good. And we have to understand that. And what I want us to look at tonight is a passage in John 11 and verse 45. And this passage through that chapter, I think it's verse 57 is the end of that. This passage is kind of the culmination of what John has been trying to say to people through that whole book. He had just given seven different miracles. We've mentioned this before. The final miracle being that of raising of Lazarus from the dead, showing that he had the power not just to raise people from the dead one day, but he had the power to raise people from the dead that day and could do it at his will. He had that kind of power. Well, the people that were there, the people in authority that were there, the Pharisees, chief priests, all those people that were the leaders, did not like that. Because every time Jesus performed a miracle, it caused people to believe. It caused people to hear Jesus Christ, to hear what he said. And it validated what he was saying, that he was the Son of God. Remember in John 3, when Nicodemus came up, and he said, we know you're a teacher come from God. No other man could do the things you do except God is with him. Confessing that he is, has to be connected with God. Now, I don't know if he went far enough to say that he was the Son of God, but he believed that he was one that was called from God. He believed that, and he was willing to confess that. Many people were willing to believe that. In John here, the end of this miracle that was performed, the end of this thing that was accomplished, and starting in verse 45 here, then many of the Jews who had come to Mary to the death of Lazarus, they were there to comfort the family in that. And so here they had come to that, and in verse 45 here, and had seen the things that were done, that Jesus did, and they believed in him. Now here's Jesus. What miracle did he perform that hurt other people? What miracle did he perform that was a punishment to other people? Every miracle he performed that I know of, he performed in such a way as to help people, as to encourage people. You go back to the first miracle, that of turning the water to wine, to help that wedding feast not to be a flop and not to fall apart. You go to when he was willing to raise the widow's son, when he raised Jairus' daughter, and all the other miracles, it was to help other people and it was to benefit other people. And that's what he was trying to do. He was doing good. Well, now, if you do good, does that mean that good things are going to come your way? Not necessarily, okay? Understand that, not necessarily. It may not. But please understand, Jesus Christ did what was right, and that's the thing we've got to understand. We've got to understand, we got to do what's right. Some of those people believed because they saw what Jesus did. Now, look at the rest of the Jews. And some of them, verse 46, went away to the Pharisees and told them the things that Jesus did. They went back to the Pharisees and said, listen, did you know what Jesus did over there the other day? He raised Lazarus. He had been dead for 4 days. He was in the tomb. We were there. And it wouldn't be anything for them to say, we were there for 4 days, because some of you may be old enough to remember that when you had a funeral, usually you had family for a long time. They were there probably before the person died, and they were there a little bit after the person died. Maybe because travel was not as easy. Maybe because it was being with the family. I don't know exactly what the reason was, but they were there. And so these people may have been there for 4 days. They may have been there at the death of Lazarus, at the burial of Lazarus, and there at the resurrection of Lazarus. And so here they were. They had seen that. Like all the times, some would believe, some would not. Maybe you've had people to say, you know, I'd believe in God if I could see a miracle. Well, some probably would. Others probably would not believe that. But here some of the Jews believed, some of the Jews did not believe, and so here they go back and they tell the Pharisees, they tell them what's happening, what Jesus is doing. So what they've got to do is they've got to do something about this. Now, look at what the Pharisees start doing. Verse 48, if we, and it talks about how that, verse 47, then the chief priest and the Pharisees gathered a council and they said, what shall we do? What are we going to do? Listen to this. For this man works many signs. You know what a sign is? Miracle. They were willing. Now, how could people admit that the things that he's doing are miracles, but then in the next breath almost say, let's kill him? How could they do that? It's hard for us to comprehend that. It's hard for us to see that people can be so deluded. Well, they might look at some of the things we do and see how deluded we are. Because we say one thing and we do something else. And we have to be careful about that. That we don't do that. That we do what we say. That what we teach is what we live. Not, well, that's the way I teach, but this is the way I live. How we teach is the way we live. And they said, he's done a miracle here. In Acts, the 4th chapter, in verse 16, it talks there about some people there, the apostles that healed a lame man. And they said, what are we going to do? The people that were there, the leadership, what are we going to do? This is a notable miracle. And they used the word miracle there. This was something that people know about, that other people find out about. And if we don't do something about this, it's going to hurt us. Now, that's what they're going to talk about here too. That's what they're going to be willing to say here. Look at verse 48. If we let him alone and we don't say anything about this, then everyone will believe in him, and the Romans will come and take away both our place and our nation. He's done a miracle. There's no question about that. They're not arguing that he did not do a miracle. They recognize that it was. What they're trying to do is to try to solve the problem of a lack of their power when the Romans find out about it. Here's another power that's coming up, another strength. What's it going to do for them? Well, the Romans may come in and say, wait a minute, you know, Caiaphas, you're the high priest. That's who the high priest was that year. I'm sorry, but this guy Jesus over here has more people on his side than you do, so we're going to go with Jesus. You're out. And you need to move. You need to leave. You're not going to get any money from us, and so you're out of this. So these fellows were worried about their office. They were worried about their livelihood. They were worried about their power. Some people don't care about money, but they really care about power. And they were going to lose it all. And the Roman government was going to come in. Now, it could be that they were worried about the Roman government coming in and taking over, because here they were losing power and there was an insurrection going on. There was difficulties going on, so the Roman government is going to come back in and put more restraints on them. Don't know exactly which one of those is true. But here they are. They're worried about their position. They're worried about what they're going to do. They're worried about something that is going to happen. They acknowledge that this is a miracle. They say that it is. They know that. They admit that there's a problem here. They admit that there's people that are believing in Jesus. Remember, if we don't say something and do something about this, all those people are going to believe in Him. More people are going to believe. Now, in business, if your competitor is pulling away your customers, you got to do something about it. And they're going to do something about it. They're going to decide what they're going to do. And what they decide they're going to do is the ultimate thing of doing away with Jesus Christ. Now, this is how they can go from recognizing that He's doing something from God and coming over here with the idea now that we can now take His life. We can deal with Him, and we're going to have to deal with Him. So here, Caiaphas speaks up, and Caiaphas says something, starting in verse 49. And one of them, Caiaphas, being a high priest that year, said to them, "You know nothing at all. You don't understand what's happening. You don't really comprehend what's going on here." Now, let me tell you something. Look at this. And he starts telling them, "Nor do you consider that it is expedient," now listen to this, for us, "that one man should die for the people, and not that the whole nation should perish." In some way, he had understood the idea of one person dying for all the people. One person, and he probably could say, and he speaks up. He doesn't just speak up as just a normal person in a meeting, but he speaks up as the one that is the head of a meeting. He's the one that's ruling. He's the one that's running everything. So he speaks up, and he said, you fellas don't understand what's going on here. It's good for one person to die for this nation. And maybe their idea was one person's life against all these other people's lives. And sometimes if we're not careful, we get into decisions like that. We can't do wrong and do right. And so here these fellas had decided this, and he's saying, listen, one fella is going to die for this, so why not let it be Jesus Christ? Now, did he understand that Jesus was the Messiah? Did he understand that He was totally from God? I don't know if he really did or not. How could you know that and understand that and still be willing to stand up as one in authority and say, "Let's kill him. Let's take his life." That's what we need to do. We need to take his life. We need to be those people that we're going to have to solve this problem, and the problem is going to be eliminate Jesus. Get him out of here. And so they make up their mind as to what they're going to do. Now, this he did, verse 51, and this is John talking about what's going on here. John says, "Now this he did not say on his own authority, but being the high priest." I mentioned a while ago, he was not just a person in a meeting talking, but he was the one that was running the meeting. He was one that had authority. So what he had to say had a great deal of weight behind it. That one should die for all the people, and that the whole nation should survive. So here he spoke up as the high priest. And he was one that he prophesied that Jesus would die for the nation. You know, how much of that is him understanding what the Scriptures have had to say, the Old Testament? Remember when Paul talked to some people, what he did? He would take the Old Testament Scriptures and prove that Jesus was the Christ, and prove that He was to die on the cross, and prove to people that He was the Messiah. This is what he was going to prove. Then verse 52, and not for that nation only, but also that he would gather together in one children of God who were scattered abroad. Now, maybe Caiaphas thought, if we take his life, this may be the thing that would cohese all of the people, the Jewish people, back together again. That it would bring them back together as one mighty nation. And maybe this is a fulfillment of the prophecy that was given about this one giving his life so that other people and God's people could be saved. Now, I'm sure that probably these people looked at the salvation that the Bible talked about as a salvation of the Jewish nation. Not just of the world. The people he's talking about here gathering together is the Jewish people, bringing all them back and gathering all them together. And they're the ones that are going to be the great rulers of the world. They're the ones that are going to be. And maybe he's saying here, now just think about this. If we get rid of Jesus, maybe this is going to cause all the other Jews to come back together. Do you see their reasoning in this? That and their justification for taking the life of Christ. How could people that are religious people that have studied even the Old Testament, and I'm not saying anything bad about that or about the New Testament, but studied the Old Testament, not understood from that book that it is wrong to take somebody's life, it is wrong to kill somebody because you don't like them? And it's certainly wrong to kill somebody who is able to perform miracles, but you just want to get rid of them and you don't like them. And so here's the time. Here's what's going on. Then, verse 53, from that day on, they plotted to kill Jesus, to put him to death. Therefore, Jesus, now this is what Jesus did. Jesus no longer walked openly among the Jews. Oh, was he afraid? Was he scared? Well, if I go back over there, they're going to take my life. If I go back among the Jews, they're going to kill me. Now, the time that he's going to die is just a few days from this, or a few weeks from this, that he's going to be put on the cross, that he's going to die there. Please don't think that Jesus was afraid of what they were going to do to him. Timing is a very important thing. Timing is so necessary. I heard some fellows talking one time, and they were in England doing some mission work. There were four missionaries in a car, and they were going down through there. They got to an intersection, and there was this big wreck of all these cars. One of the guys looked over and said, you know, if we'd have been 2 minutes early, we'd have been involved in that. We all might be dead right now. If we were 2 minutes early. Have you had things to happen in your life where you were right there at the right time? Or maybe you were right there at the wrong time? That happens sometimes. Timing is very important. Timing is so important. You know, you go back to the Old Testament and people are able to explain away some of the miracles that were done there, like the water being parted so the children of Israel could come across, and some other things that they talked about that would happen there, and the miracles that were performed there. And everybody says, well, you know, that could be performed by this, or that could be performed by that. Remember when Moses cast his rod down and it swallowed up those other snakes, and those fellows were able to do something like that? They were able to perform a miracle to take away. Let me tell you something. It's not a matter of just the miracle that was performed. It's a matter of the timing that was there. The water turned to blood. A hailstorm that was coming. All those 10 plagues. Those might have happened at other times. Things like that might have happened before. So where's the miracle? Because Moses said, it's going to happen at this time. It's going to happen on this day. It's going to happen this way. And he explained it there. Timing is very important. It was not the time for Jesus to go to the cross. Remember what he told his mother there when he was asked to perform this miracle, to turn the water into wine? It's not my time yet. Timing is very important. It's very necessary. It was not the time for Jesus to die. He was going to die at a time when that city was so filled with people that they were just, it overflowed. at a time when people were brought there from all the different countries. All the Jewish people came together there, and they were coming together for this great feast. And then at that feast, they were going to go back to their countries. Go back and say, you know, while we were down at Jerusalem, there was a fellow named Jesus that died on a cross. I heard Peter when he stood up and preached a sermon there. And that sermon that Peter preached, it caused me to think, this guy's got to be the Son of God. Maybe they said, I was one of those 3,000 that was baptized that day. Timing's very important. It was not the time for Jesus to die. And so Jesus didn't go among them, and he stayed away from them, and he went into another country there nearby in the wilderness to a city called Ephraim, and there remained with his disciples. And the Passover of the Jews was near. Passover's going to be an important thing. And many went from the country up to Jerusalem before the Passover to purify themselves. This city was going to be filled. Would you want to have Jesus down the cross at a time when most of the people were gone, or at a time when the people were filling that city up? You see the wisdom of God in doing this and this thing happening? And they sought Jesus. And they spoke among themselves. You see, Jesus, in a sense, did not even have to be there. These people were talking about him and the miracles he performed. There was no way these people could keep him quiet. There's no way that the chief priests and the Pharisees and all the people could keep the talk about Jesus and what Jesus did and the miracles he performed. Even when he wasn't there, they were saying, where's he at? I want to see him. I want to talk to him. Maybe some were saying, I want to see a miracle that he performed. They were wanting to see him, and so here these people were, and they stood there at the temple. What do we think, that he will not come to the feast? Is he going to come to this feast? Is he going to come here? Now both the chief priest and the Pharisees had given a command, and they had authority to command it. They had given a command that if anyone knew where he was, that they should come and report it to them, that they might seize him. Now, maybe they didn't say, we're going to kill him. But you know, sometimes you know what's going to happen, even though it hadn't been said what was going to happen. You know what the result was going to be. All this is a fulfillment of a passage in the Old Testament, Genesis 3 and verse 15, which says there that the heel of this child of the woman is going to be bruised. But he's going to bruise the head of Satan. And that's what it's talking about. John's trying to prepare these people and help them to understand that Jesus is the Messiah, that he's the Son of God, that he's the one you need to listen to. That's what he started talking about. He said, John is God's mouthpiece to speak to all the people this word of God so that they'll know it and they'll understand it. Oh, man, what can we learn from this? We've got a God that has the power to do what he says he's going to do. He has the power to raise his son up. He has the power to raise you up and me up. He has the power to help us to live the Christian life. He has the power to encourage us and lift us up in every great way. He's got the power to do that. And he wants to do that. He doesn't want you to be drab. Mark talked about it this morning, about how, you know, a mule, a little boy thought a mule was a Christian because of the sour look on his face. And Mark was saying, we need to be happy. Why do we need to be happy? Because we got a God that's doing a lot for us. And he's going to give that to us. It's not something you earn. It's not something you make. It's not something, basically, that we deserve. If you read Romans 8, we don't deserve it. Enemies fighting against him. But he came and he offered that to us, the salvation, the forgiveness of sins. And here John is trying to help people to see that. John has been trying to do that since the day this book was written, to help people to see who the Messiah is and to be willing to follow the Messiah. Whatever it costs you to be a Christian, it's worth it. It's worth every bit of it. Whatever you have to sacrifice to be a child of God, it's worth it. God has the power to send His Son to this earth, to put Him on a cross and to take Him off that cross for us so that we could be saved. And He did it at the right time so that we could have that. Isn't it wonderful to live at a time when we don't have to look forward to anything? We've got it right now. You can be saved right now. You say, I can't go to heaven today. Let me tell you something. If you really look at it, the church is a part of heaven right now. And so a part of what we're doing right now in our singing, in our worship, is drawing ourselves closer to God. Where is He at? He's in heaven. That's what we're doing right now. Now, I'm not saying the church today is heaven. I'm not saying that heaven is on this earth. But I'm saying that our hearts are brought closer to God, and God's in heaven. So we have the power to do that. That's what we're trying to do. Today, if you're not a Christian, I want you to think about that. I want you to think about being a child of God. Think about following what God says. If you are a Christian, think about your life. Think about how you glorify God. Now you see, some of those people heard Jesus, and some of those people denied Jesus. And we do the same thing. Our confession of Jesus Christ is not just made at our baptism, but it's made every day by the way we live our lives. Please, you think about your soul. You think about your life. And if we can help you in any way, not because we're any better, but because God says that good people need to be praying for other good people, that's what we want to try to do for you and help you in every way that we can. And show you what this thing says, this book says, to follow. Please come right now as we stand in this.